Jackson Wright on Suzanne's Reel this Friday, the 30th of July, 1971. Suzanne reports. Just before Faye takes off from Oxford, Channel 1 Wright on Suzanne's Reel this Friday, the 30th of July, 1971. Channel 1 Wright on Suzanne's Reel.
I start in the middle and work. Because what happened? I got home from having her out here. And I. And the whole thing, the whole morning was just gone.
Oh, really? Blanked out.
It was blanked out completely. And I started thinking, well, what in the world did she talk about? And I thought, let's see. There's Dr. Gibney, and that was a blank.
Yeah.
And there's Orman. And all I got from that was her sitting reared back in the chair just laughing her head off. And I gathered from what y'all were talking about that he's the one that had the still that you'd laughed about over at her house one night. And so I knew that's why she was laughing at this Deacon Gore wanted her to come back to church when he's got his still out there. But... But I guess the whole thing was just a blank. And I thought, well, you gotta do something with it. And I sat there and I thought. I couldn't even tell Jim what had gone on. Other than that we'd gone over to her house, or I had, to pick her up. And we went in the parlor and sat down for a few minutes. And she decided not to put on a different dress. And I said, they just had some children over there. So she didn't put on a different dress. And
well, that's the dress she had on.
Yeah, that yellow one. The one she had on.
Was it yellow?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was yellow with kind of grayish black pockets and around the collar. One of the pockets was kind of torn off. It's better than the first dress I saw her in, I guess. But she had on the white shoes and the purse. And
yeah.
That's right.
And I didn't think of that at first. In fact, it just dawned on me just now why she was ready for me, I think. Because I called from here and told her I'd come over and get her, and she must have put on the shoes and gotten the purse, thinking she's coming over here. Because normally she just wears those kind of battered shoes around the house. But she had on those white shoes when I got there.
That means she'd also changed her dress.
Yeah, I
bet you anything she changed her dress.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was true.
Because I don't think she put on the shoes and then not changed the dress, too.
Yeah.
But anyway. So we went in the parlor and sat down. Then I say, well, I'll look at the mantle. As you mentioned. That was a bomb. Because all I saw on the mantle was that the bronze horse on the end and the picture of the two boys. And a picture of a cat and her kitten, and all that hair, scalp medicine, and bottles, and medicine sitting up there, along with the little knickknacks and pictures.
Scalp medicine.
Well, it's something. It's in a box, you know, and it's
yeah.
a scalp.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but she is in there all the time, so I couldn't be too obvious. So her dog came over and climbed up my lap. I think I've been adopted by the dog, too. And so she sat there and talked about Aunt Nora a little bit. And said she is doing poorly. She's doing real poorly. She said her legs is just black.
No circulation?
Well, she didn't know what caused it. And I mentioned maybe it's circulation. She said, well, she went and all this. They take her home from the hospital. And she was real bad, and they put her in a wheelchair, and she'd sit up for a few minutes and then have to lie back down, and her mind just wouldn't hold on to things, and her legs were just black and swollen, and the doctor wasn't doing anything about that. And she said that somebody scratched her with a fingernail and all the liquid came out, too. Limp, I guess. But, and then when I thought later on, when she's sitting out here talking about getting her shoes, here's Nora practically on her deathbed, and she wanted her, what is her sister? Or somebody to take her over to get a pair of those shoes like Miss Mary had. We were sitting down on the chairs.
I don't remember that. Miss Guthrie said she did?
Yeah, we were in the chairs, and Miss Guthrie said she'd gotten the 2 pair for $5.
Yes.
And it told Aunt Nora and whoever Aunt Nora is staying with. And I missed that. I think it's her sister or somebody. And Aunt Nora, the way Miss Guthrie has it, she's about ready to, she says, to leave us, as she says. And wanted them to take her to the shoe store so she could get herself a pair of those. Two pair for $5.
Yes, I remember now. Aunt Nora's standing with her daughter.
Oh, is it her daughter?
Yes.
That's cool. And on the way over, she's real quiet, and she kind of hangs on to the window with both hands. One end, and she reaches over, holds on the other, and I drove about 35 all the way over because I knew it. You know, she likes to go slow. She said she sat there a little bit and didn't look like she's interested in much, or looked like she was. She just gets all quiet, you know, and it really bothers me. And she's done when I was over there, and I think, well, she's bored. You know, she's unhappy about something, you know, because she just sits there and she doesn't say anything, you know, just looks out. And then she said, "Have you seen those turkeys along the road here?" I said, "No, I haven't." She says, "There's a whole flock of them. There's about 50 little ones, and 3 or 4 hens and a cocks." And so they come up and down, and she can hear them sometimes from the road. And then she didn't say anything more until we got about even with Miss Daisy's, and she remembered a joke she'd heard. Well, this one is mild compared to the one of Marvin, but she just said, "I don't know what brought it. I think she saw a little boy out in the yard someplace driving up." And she said, "Marvin told me a good joke." She starts laughing before she ever tells you what it's about. She said, "There's this Jew woman who married a nigger man. And they had a little boy. And the little boy came running in the house one day and asked his mother and said, 'Mama, there's a bicycle. There's a boy's got a new bicycle down the road, and I want to know, should I steal it or should I Jew it out of him?'" She just goes off these gales of laughter. And she gets so tickled with her own joke. She just laughs, Jew him out of him. And then she saw your Faye's lilies down there. She wanted to know what kind of lilies they were. She's real taken with them. She thinks they're beautiful.
Oh, does she?
Oh, yeah, she loves them. I said, "Well, Faith said they're wild." She says, "Well, they look like Easter lilies to me." And I said, "Well, maybe Ms. Miles will let us take some home with you, you know, to transplant the bulb." And she says, "Oh, no, she might not like that." I said, "We could ask her." But that was about, when I got home, that was the only thing that stuck in my mind. And the rest of it was just,
Suzanne said she didn't remember saying in the talk, Faye, here, all that marvelous talk.
Yeah.
But the other time, you know, when she came over here, she remembered everything. She spent half a day with her over several hours.
Yeah.
And she remembered everything. And that is something, isn't it?
I was trying to think why that, well, I say, when Miss Daisy was here, that was just absolutely gone, and it still is. And I think I got to listening to her voice so much, you know, just I like to watch your mouth for some reason. But I got home, and the only thing that stayed in that was calling that man Bear Taylor, and I couldn't even fix that up for Jim. And usually that's what I do. You know, I go home and tell Jim about all these good things. That guy boomeranged on me, I guess. With that joke about Joel Smith. Because I had no idea Jim knew Joel Smith. He waltzes into his office. He come home that afternoon and told me. You know, I told him about the fishing trip. And Jim laughed, you know, and the next day he saw Joel, he hunted Joel Smith up. What he did, he says, "What's this I hear about a fishing trip you had last week?" I said, "Jim, you didn't." He said, "Yeah." And Joel Smith says, "Is she spreading that damn story around?" Yeah, I got back to her. Well, I'm thinking, well, that won't hurt much because everybody up there knows about it through Marvin.
Yeah, already there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that'd be too bad. That part of it is to me, those kind of jokes they spread around, like Marvin and the baby. Now, I gather just kind of evidently it's a friend of theirs who adopted a baby or just had a baby, you know, and went and told Marvin. And Miss Mary's going to milk that for all it's worth, just, you know, to ride Marvin and let that get spread up there so they can rag him.
See, Faye, that's a side that I see nothing of.
Mm-hmm.
Why, I wouldn't even listen to her if she started that off, you know. I'd manage somehow, you know, to get out from under that.
But
Suzanne brings it to life.
Yeah, that's a side of it.
Isn't that amazing?
That's why when she brought that up to the table, I don't know. Then I thought, well, she won't mind, because yeah, it's just sort of, they just let that kind of stuff go around. But.
What they talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking. I lost my track somewhere along the line. But anyway, now when I went over to see Mr. Weaver Saturday or Sunday. This is still on that time. Being able to, I can remember things when I talk to them that I can't remember when you're taping them, sitting in here taping.
And she didn't pay attention to the children.
Yeah, she. We drove up, and we drove out there to look for them out in the pasture, and they weren't there. So we drove on down to, down the lane, and it didn't look to me like she could care less whether we saw the children or not. And I'm not real sure. She never said much to them or anything. Of course, they didn't talk to her. But she watched them a while, but I think maybe she just... she carries her purse around with her. It's what, you know... I think, well, I come out here and I just leave my purse in the car. I'm not going to drag that thing around with me everywhere. But she gets her purse in her arm and carries it anytime we move or walk around. And park the car right by the pen to look at the colts because they'd come running up when they saw the car. And I thought, well, should we just get out of the car and look at the colts a little bit? And she took the purse with her and it couldn't be more than 5 feet away. But she wouldn't leave it in the car, and she stood there with her purse, watching the colts. But she wasn't real interested in them either, I don't think. She came up with that Marvin, Bubba was standing there, and I was up on the fence, and she looked at me, she said, "Well, would you be afraid to ride him right now?" Well. I said, "Miss Mary, we put a feed bucket under his nose. I wouldn't be afraid to ride him right now." And she laughed and she said, "Marvin used to break colts, you know, young horses. That he'd get the sand, a bag, and fill it with sand so they'd get used to the weight." And I asked her if, said, you know, she must have had quite a few horses when she's grown up. And she said yes, but that's as far as it went. And I was thinking, when Miss Glisson was out here, she went into a lot of that about having the horses. But she did say they'd had 1 3-year-old colt that they'd raised that got bit by a rabid dog, and that while we were standing out there. And she didn't laugh about it, I guess. They had the dog, they'd gotten bit, and they'd tied it in the shed, Mr. Guthrie and Marvin, and left it out there. And the horse got to poking around and got in mixed up with the dog, and the dog bit him. Miss Guthrie was the only one who saw it. I guess she was the only one around. So when the doctors came out to give everybody shots, she told them that the horse had been bit too, and they'd better do something. And they didn't believe her, and they didn't do anything. So sure enough, after a while, the colt started acting funny, and she said it just got to tear around in the corral and running into things, and it would lift its knee up and bite it. She said, and you could just hear those bones crack. Well, but she said, they believed her that she'd gotten in with the dog, and they put the horse down. But the children just, I think maybe she, you know, like you took those kids by. It's probably older people, I mean older young people as she.
Oh, she likes them all.
Does she?
I think they were kind of independent. And they are encouraged to be independent out here.
Yeah. Well, I guess they, you know, they didn't know her and they didn't know me, and they didn't see any sense in telling us about their picnic or their expedition. Cause
yes, that's right. Now, you all, they didn't let you in on it.
No.
That could have been, yeah.
I know when I was young, I'd feel self-conscious around people I didn't know. If it was my family, I'd tell them, but other than that. But when we were going home, the whole time, and they're sitting in the back seat, not a word.
Really?
Absolutely not one sound. They sat back there, and they let Miss Mary and me talk, and I felt kind of funny because they were back there. And they didn't say a word. Until she left, and then right away, they waited till we're out of the yard, and they started talking about their horse shows. You know, how many horse shows have you been to? Well, I've been to 5 horse shows. And they talk about some girl who was a snob and thought her horse was so great, or there were a bunch of older riders there, but they didn't do so hot. They started kind of bragging. And then they found a pair of pliers in the back seat. And the whole rest of the trip, we went by way of Windsor, and it took forever to get home. They were roughhousing, well, not roughhousing, but giggling. They'd get the pliers and pull splinters out of each other's fingers, and they'd get the skin and twist it, you know, shot out. They'd scream, you know, not loud, but, you know, stop it, you're killing me. And then the other one would be her turn, and she'd get hold of Chondell would get hold of Margaret. And they went on like that the whole way back. And when I went into the travel service place to get your ticket, I left them in the car, and when I got back, things were quiet. They were sitting, both kind of sitting kind of straight in the back seat. And we drove on. In a few minutes, I heard these kind of giggles back there. You know, I didn't want it known, but finally came out, and Chantel said, "You didn't hit that car." Marty said, "Yes, I did. I heard it ping." So they've been parked there, and evidently it's a perfect opportunity. They threw something out of the car and hit something while I was gone.
Hit a passing car.
Marty said, "It always makes a ping like that when it hits." She's done it before. But what, I guess what tickled me was then, I used to drive my sister and her girlfriend around. And, well, that's time.
I think Miss Mary would enjoy that too.
You what? You drove what?
Well, Cindy, she's funny. She used to have a girlfriend named Jan, which still does. And Cindy's very reserved around most people. You know, she's quiet. She's very self-conscious and behaves, you know. Well, when she and Jan get together, it's just an absolute riot the entire time that they're together. Usually they spend the night. And I get so, when I'm there, I just encourage her, Cindy, all the time. I said, why don't you invite Jan over? Because I get to drive him around. And I get to take him, you know, to the show or horseback riding or something like that. And I get the biggest kick out of it because she and Jan get together and they forget that they're 17 and seniors in high school, or it didn't matter even when they're younger. And they absolutely live in a hysterical state. They laugh and cut up. And it doesn't matter what either one of them says. They'll both end up laughing at it, and just it goes on all night. You know, you can hear them down the hall in the bedroom all night long. You know, Mom will wake up or I'll wake up, and you can still hear them going at 3 o'clock in the morning. So what to do? But I used to drive them around, and I'd get Cindy because I'd drive the car and I'd make it stop real fast. You know, so you get thrown forward like that, you know. Well, they'd be in the back seat, and they'd never know when I was going to do it. It's just kind of running contest. They'd watch for when I was going to do it, and then I'd wait till they weren't watching and throw them up on the seat. But they let me in on their fun, I guess, is why I like Jim. But they're both just insane. And then those two little girls back there just get those pliers and just pinch as hard as they could pinch. And what Margaret said, you broke a blood vessel in my finger. And Chantel fell on the floor. And but they won't stop because it hurts. They just keep on with it. But Cindy and Jan are like that. Horseback riding. But I guess Miss Mary would really like that if she could, you know, see him cutting up, if they'd let her in on it. Well, not even let her in on it, just do it while she's around, not worry about her. Of course, I expect she'd draw some limits when they're in the house. Like Shirley Dodd's kids.
I wonder.
I think, I don't know, when she's talking about Johnny, well, you can tell, you know, just getting up on the bed with his black feet and watching TV when he could be out there making hay, you know, it's just bad. And I guess that's kind of like, the first dad's over there, she's talking about her, Julia's daughter, I guess, who's 14 this year, or some niece. Was 14, and they wanted to pay her to come stay with her, Miss Mary, for a while during the day.
Yes, well, she was going to pay Bonnie.
Oh, was she?
Maybe the other one too.
Yeah, but the other one, she said she just lays in bed till 10 o'clock in the morning. She frowned. Just lies in bed. You kind of like that, but trailer episode with Marvin's family relations, you know, out in the trail, and the girl steps on the, what was it, a brand new couch with her dirty feet, just barefoot. And she keeps her own house pretty clean, it looks like.
It does.
Yeah, the parlor, both times I've been in there, is very, very neat.
Yeah.
And clean.
Kitchen is clean.
Yeah, and the kitchen too. And the beds are made.
Yeah. does her housework. But she doesn't seem to, you know, just pat it. She or Doug gets through with it, doesn't she?
Seems to be. Mm-hmm. Probably. Right, way to
do it. Just go ahead and get it done.
That one thing about Johnny, that was a tremendous statement she made, that he was the whole cause of her going to, I've forgotten it, but
Ocala with the,
yeah,
with the children.
Orlando, way down there, you see, they spent six,
school year.
Old school year?
Yeah. Yeah, Shirley Dot told me about it, but
yeah.
She didn't say why. She says because they had so many niggers in the school.
Well, it wasn't just Johnny, it was, but
you're
just working on her information.
Yeah.
And that was a large statement, and there's a good deal of truth in it. And Shirley did take the children's view of what was happening. I think any view would have been bad enough, you see. It was sad over there. It was sad, there's no doubt about it. But that was it. But that statement about Johnny, you'd say, well, that's overdone. But what she's doing, without realizing it, is, you know, she's overstating it. Whoso would be a man, she's overstating it in order to see it.
Mm.
And opens it up. And she takes it all through, the tractor on the hay and the hill. And the God won't correct it.
She's a little bit mad at
Ned
Dodd.
Well, she got in that even from, you know, like, you can't tell them anything about the fireplace.
I've forgotten that.
She'd gotten that, was it Arnold Fowler or somebody? Do the fireplace.
Yeah, that's all I know.
And then Shirley Dodd hires the same man to do it after Miss Mary has told her what a fouled up job he did.
Yeah.
I guess on the assumption that once she knows what a bad workman is, well, of course Shirley Dodd won't hire him. And then Shirley Dodd goes right ahead and hires him and won't listen to Miss Mary. And I think that would probably.
Well, you see,
they won't listen to what you tell them.
They won't listen to what you tell them.
Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's that fireplace or whether it's having the TV on when there's lightning.
That's right.
They just don't listen. And then that from there she went on, I think, with the children. I don't know if Miss Mary's ever told Shirley Dodd that Johnny, you know, isn't quite the saint. That I don't expect she'd jump into that. She may think it, but I don't think she'd tell him.
Oh, that's the question. That is, you wonder just how much they will hear, as you tell them. Now, I kept wanting to tell them this. Actually, it wasn't the chicken. The trouble with her flowers, it was her behavior. And I was on the point sometimes earlier, and she didn't let me do it.
No, she wouldn't.
I didn't push it. And I shouldn't have been on the point. Oh, I shouldn't have told it so directly. Maybe I should have said, we've been trying to get a started honeysuckle over here. And it looks like what the trouble is, this grass grows faster than the honeysuckle, crossed out.
Yeah, just roundabout. Kind of. And then she can pick it up with her azaleas.
If she wants to.
Yeah. What I, you know, I I was glad you told me that you, before, the day before, you'd gone to look at her yard. Because y'all had been jumping in the yard business, you know, and I didn't know what you'd done before. I thought, now, why on earth are they talking about flowers? You know, like, to me, I wouldn't anymore think of flowers as a, you know, as a subject introduced to get some talk. But she'd do it, especially with the chicken yard flower.
Well, I listened to the tape, and everything I did on the tape was wrong. I said the cannabis must have been there a good while. I thought maybe they'd had a, we used to have a big bed of them. And well, that's where we throw the dishwater.
Mm-hmm.
No, just been put out. Faye said something about this later. No, she bought them, and they hadn't been put out on. And we got on several other things, but where it worked out. So he asked her that most extraordinary question. He says, what are those green bushes over there on a skeleton or something like that? And that worked out. That palm crystal. And that was rich. We tried that on Miss Daisy, and she didn't know all that. She didn't pick that up from Georgia. Now she had, Miss Daisy knew the flowers, and she also knew that there were plentiful over at George Mitchell's in the back of the house, back of where the old chicken yard was.
See, I tried to see the house with the old plantings around it, because there's certain things old houses have. Suzanne did something nice. She brought up the crepe myrtle.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember you said, you know, she, well, you open it, because you said that it used to be people would just give each other plantings and stuff. And she just mentioned, when we were over there, the crepe myrtle had been given to her by Mr. Guthrie's wife's daddy.
Don't forget, first wife.
Yeah, first wife. Father, and of course I guess I didn't take much note of it then until y'all brought that up, and then I thought, well, she had been given at least one thing, two things, the two fertile things.
Didn't go into that. We got off on the wrong track. It just didn't work out. They've done that same thing. Mr. Weaver's dogs didn't like carrots.
Worse than a bat.
I didn't hear that.
He's got, you know, when we first went over there, there were four puppies. And one of them, three of them were black and tan. And one was a gray and white dog pup. And he's the biggest one, even several months ago, he's the biggest one. I guess they're about 3 months old now, I think. And he calls him Bread Fat. Well, it's not his regular name. He hadn't named him yet.
Call him what?
Bread Fat.
Bread Fat.
Bread Fat. He's bread and he's fat. But that's not his name. He'll register him later on and give him a name. But that's just what he gets called. Well, Bread Fat was out on the porch and about twice as big as when I saw him last. So he came down there, and he's covered with fleas. You can just see him crawling all over his back, just solid. Just real lumpy. You know, you pat him, and he feel lumpy. So Mr. Weaver says, them dogs, if they stay around here, they wouldn't get those fleas, but they go off there with those other dogs and pick up fleas. And Mr. Weaver doesn't have them around his house because he doctors his dogs. He says, you hold him a minute. I said, okay. Well, a minute he headed for the house, the dog knew something was up. It's like those colts smelling alcohol. He just knew. So there I was, holding the dog.
Like what?
Like the colts and the alcohol when they got the shots. Cookie said, I don't know if this is true, Cookie said if they hadn't smelled alcohol, they wouldn't have gotten so excited.
That's what Cookie said.
But, so there I was trying to hold bread fat, and didn't have a collar. So I just had my arm around it, and this little puppy from next door was over there, crawling all over me. Wanted to play, and he's using his teeth. Shoot all over my hands and arms and up on my back, and just trying to hold one dog while the other one wanted to play. I was down the dirt down there. It was really bad. But Mr. Weaver came out, and he had his pan. He has this green stuff, kerosene and sulfur and grease.
Well, you keep something made up.
Yeah, he had it all ready. He just went in the house and brought it back out. He says, I got to doctor these dogs every other day. He says, because the puppies, because they go off and get fleas. And so the little puppy that was still there playing, he just dabbed a little bit on the cloth and just dripped it on his back, and the dog just took off around the corner. He wasn't going to wait around to get his fleas get rid of, so he just took off around the corner, and he got close to one of the female dogs he had chained around over there, and the dog got one whiff of the puppy and headed for her house, you know, just chained and everything.
That's kerosene.
Going as fast as she could go. So he got down with bread fat and held him. Just put his hand under his neck. And the dog just stayed there and didn't try to get away. And had one foot lifted. And it just kind of... the poor puppy, you know, he just... this whole attitude was, ooh. So Mr. Weir went all over him. Just really soaked him with that stuff. And the fleas just came up, you know, on his back. And they looked dead to me. They just came up, you know.
You just saw them coming up through the fur.
Yeah, they were underneath, and then all of a sudden his whole back was just had fleas on right on the top.
Oh.
So he went over the whole dog, you know, his feet and then a little bit in his ears and all. And when he got through, he let the puppy go, and he says, now he'll go off and wallow and brush all those fleas off. He was right, because for the next 30 minutes, that poor old dog was all getting the dirt, you know, and he'd rub his ears down in the dirt and on his back and trying to get the smell off. And every time he'd come close to another dog, and the other dog would smell it. The dog would go off and hide someplace. That big one he has out in front named Dan, he went over there and he smelled the puppy, you know, and he just went, this is far back in the bushes as he could get. Just kind of curled up there. Hope Mr. Weaver wasn't going to look his way.
I told you then about Pappy and those cows.
Yeah.
They caught on to my new fly remedy. I took some kerosene and burnt oil and put a little of that fly poison in it.
See you coming.
They took it two or three times without protest. So then I had to run them down. I remember the first, second, third time they went off in this side pasture. And they were moving pretty fast. I should have known that. They noticed it. I should have known that. Have a reaction. Just a little kerosene. I didn't know that would get it. Especially after all I heard Mr. Weaver say about the virtues of it. But he didn't look at it from the dog's point of view.
He says, now they hate this stuff.
He said that?
Yeah, of course he knows they hate it, but he says it works.
And here you were holding
it. Yeah, well, I was holding it. Mr. Weaver came back out, he held it. Told me to go sit on the porch. Something happened. We weren't on the porch all the time. Oh, yeah, he wanted me to make friends with Bruce, one of the older dogs. And we walked on around there, and I know it was. Bruce was yowling about something. Mr. Weaver was going to check on him, see what he's doing. Well, the dog was just playing. And he got up, we got up close there, and his bark changed. And Mr. Weaver says, "That he's barking now like he wants to make friends." Well, of course, the dog won't come close to me. He'll stay out of Mr. Weaver's reach when I'm there. I guess anybody. So we worked out the system. What we were going to do was, I was going to stand with my back to the dog and just very slowly back up. And Mr. Weaver was going to hold him and let me back up a little ways and see if the dog would come up and sniff at me. Well, he didn't. We worked at it for about 10 minutes because I think Mr. Weaver wanted me to pet Bruce. But finally, we decided, well, we'd just let it go. So we walked on, and Bruce came right up to where I'd been standing and sniffed the ground. He said, Mr. Weaver said, "Now next time, he'll know you." He said, "He won't bark at you." Well, when you pet him, he won't bark at me. And that's when we went back, that's when he pulled out all his pictures of the dogs and the hunting magazine and registration forms.
I've never seen any of his pictures, dog pictures.
He had, they're just little Kodak snapshots, and he had one of a dog named Maybell. And he's real fond of Maybell. He gave him to his nephew down the road. And the dog got so that, of course, he'd take Maybell with him whenever he'd go hunting, but he was those kids' pet. But I don't know what his nephew's wife's name is, but anyway, she would say, "Call Mac, Maybell." And the dog would stand up there and howl for him. He said, and just howl. And Mr. Weaver would come. And they got the dog doing that pretty regular. And so that's what one of the pictures was. And it was a picture of Maybell calling for Mac. The other pictures were mostly of a cat hunt where they caught a 32-pound bobcat. And they were four of his dogs, and he pointed one out and said, "Now that's Grady." And I thought, well, if that's Grady, that was a long time ago, because the hunt he told us about with Grady was in 1935. Of course, Grady was just a puppy then, but anyway, so he didn't talk about the hunt, which kind of surprised me. But he did talk about the dogs, that they ran Fox 3 days in a row one time. Not solid, but just, yeah. And then kind of in between all these other snapshots of the dogs and the cat hunt was this one of him.
Yeah.
It was a cornfield in the background, and he's standing there in the black suit with the straw hat. Is it Panama hat? Is that what? No, it's not Panama hat.
Straw.
Yeah, it's a straw hat with a black band. It's flat on top with the rim's not curved or anything. It's just
no,
a straight rim.
No.
And he's holding something out to the lady in white, dressed all in a kind of a white dress. And he says, "Who do you think that is?" I said, "Is that you, Mr. Weaver?" He laughed and said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, that's a pretty fancy hat you've got." And he said, "That's a $4 hat. That's the best hat you could get then."
Oh,
$4.
I remember.
Say, girls didn't do it. Boys and men did. They would buy a nice hat, a nice pair of shoes, and that's all they'd have nice.
Yeah.
It could be, I don't know when they'd do it. And they just live around those things. I suppose just wear the regular old britches.
Do not have to be matched up.
Oh, no. No.
Well, you remember Mr. Weaver said when he had to go on the service, he gave his good suit to his brother.
Yeah.
You know, and say, "Well, go ahead and use it. There's no sense in going west." And evidently, he's always managed to get himself a good suit to have around.
Yeah.
And even when he went up to, Tennessee, when he left Alabama, he carried a suit with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
he thought he'd travel light, but he carried a suit with him.
I was trying to make him travel light.
Yeah.
But
And a big handbag.
Yeah,
and
a carpet thing.
What was that, Suzanne? You found out it wasn't just singing.
Oh, yeah. The parties.
Parties.
Yeah. I brought up Miss Guthrie. We were out. He gave me a bunch of peppers, hot peppers. And I said, boy, I bet Miss Guthrie would fix these up pretty fancy. Some pickles or something. He said, yes, I expect she would. I heard she's a good cook. He says, what you need are some of those plum tomatoes, just about the size of your thumb, and put these peppers in with them and pickle them. And I said, I forgot how it comes up. But anyway, I asked him, finally, if he'd gone to Miss Guthrie's parties. She used to have the dances. He said no. He said he didn't even know about them. But he'd been to parties in North Alabama. And he started up on those. I said, did you get somebody to fiddle for you most of the time? He said, well, I fiddled.
Oh.
Oh, no. He fiddles too. So he said he used to fiddle for him, but his brother was better at it, and he'd let his brother do it most of the time because Mr. Weaver liked to dance. But he said fiddling wasn't anything to it. You just had to learn to wiggle your fingers and play with them. He said he had to work a while at it, but he got so he could do pretty well. I said, well, as much noise and all as they have, and somebody calling the dance, you wouldn't have to play it just right. He said, yes, you would. He said, you had to play good or they wouldn't ask you again. he either called the dances or he wanted to dance himself, and he'd get out there and buck dance himself.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, well, Miss Weaver, what's a buck dance? He said, well, have you ever done the Charleston? I said, no, I've tried it, but it's just from pictures. I said, it looked pretty hard. He said, well, it was hard. And he'd go out and get out on the floor and dance. But he picked up the same thing Miss Mary had, that there wasn't any drinking. You just didn't show up with it on your breath or a bottle in your pocket or anything. Or he said they'd just ask you outside and tell you to go home. And you weren't invited back again. That just wasn't part of it. You just didn't show up with liquor. And there's no roughhousing and no fighting and no carrying on. You behaved yourself. He said, now I've always, ever since I was a boy, wanted to be part of upstanding, have people's respect. And he came. They must have gone around just take turns, the kids' families, letting them have those dances. And he said, no, some people had too many kids. Some people didn't hold with the dancing. Some people went to bed early. So what they do is, like Miss Guthrie, they just let them use their house. And they'd arrange for somebody to play for them. And he said, there'd be big crowds sometimes, not everybody get in the house to dance, and they take all the furniture out. All the furniture in the parlor. And Miss Guthrie said that they used to just stick it off to the side and clear all the floor. Miss Weaver said they just take it all out and put it out in the yard and dance in that empty room. And when they got to, they'd put it all back again. Have their dance.
You know, he didn't ever go over to Miss Guthrie's.
No.
But a lot of the things he does, it seems like he did them up in North Alabama, Suzanne.
Yeah.
And after he got down here, I don't think he, I think he was enterprising. That enterprise inside of him is what he talks about. You see, he's out on that fur trading for 90 days, and he never stops. Can't change clothes.
He even said he learned how to listen and write and talk at the same time. He'd be writing letters, he said, in a business like that. He's talking about his fur trading. He had a lot of writing accounts to do, and he'd write and be talking to somebody at the same time. And he says, now you had to do this. He says, in business, you got to be able to do this and listen, too, because he says, now there'd be somebody out there and say, we're going to tell him we want this for our furs, but we'll take this. They talk about heat over here, of course, and they didn't know about it. I guess I think that's what got me when he's talking about the blacksmith shop up, that the men wanted him to go into business as a blacksmith. He said, no, not unless you'll board me until the season comes around again. And that's what I think made me think of Franklin and the autobiography, that, you know, with him with his little wheelbarrow with the printing sheets on there, and making a name for himself and letting people know that he's in business and he's industrious and frugal and thrifty and all this sort of stuff. But it's such a, Mr. Weaver is such a gay thing. You know, it was just sort of, he couldn't sit still, so he'd set himself up in business.
Yeah.
Why work for somebody else when he could do it himself?
Mm-hmm.
And
Well, now you see, that apparently is what happened to Franklin himself.
Yeah.
He just did that. It was just like he'd pick up fiddling.
Yeah.
Except printing was his passion. They say, from the beginning to the very end, and he never gave it up, and he'd set his own type. So that may be a little still like Mr. Weaver. It's enterprising, you'd say, but it's also what he lives around. Categories won't stay all apart, will it?
I was interested in I had the same thing. I couldn't see that.
I see.
All right.
If you're going to talk, you ought to be conscious that this is where you talk at. And you don't have to sit back there with your knees crossed.
I wasn't going to talk.
Well, if you're going to comment.
Well, I was interested in Suzanne... not seeing that house over there and the road except as a highway through it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's a cleared highway.
Yes.
Straight.
Yes. 90-foot square across.
Yeah. That's why when Miss Daisy talked about Francis Pursley living out in the woods, or Miss Mary living out in the woods, and they right here on the highway. Just couldn't picture it.
And that changes the whole open range.
Well,
yeah.
Well, just since I've been down here, that was paved.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated to see it paved. It was, they had the right of way, but it was, at that time, still had the right of way. But that little old grade road just wound around.
Well, that's, you know, if I can see it like that, then when she talks about the cows moving, then I can see how they can move, you know, and that the road wouldn't stop them because it wasn't that much of a road. But about the time that Miss Mary's talk Tuesday started coming back to me was I was writing my parents and kind of ease them over the Georgia business and try to tell them, you know, why. You know, I tell them that I'm going to try to explain a little bit of what is going on down here, you know, and that how much I like it, so that they'll think, well, she's still going to get her degree, you know, this is just part of it. So that's when I started thinking, well, how would I tell them about this open range? The way Miss Mary brought up. And it's just, you know, I see that picture of Mr. Guthrie she's got in the parlor. And I can hear him down by the lake with the whip and hear the cows moving. Because you always hear the cows move, you know, because they make so much noise. But it's what's nice is to hear the voices behind them. And those, especially if it's from some kind of distance.
And that whip crack.
Yeah, I bet it would. And then she found it and wants a handle for it.
She wants to hear that whip crack again. I don't know whether you can transfer experience in a little short letter or not.
Well, they're not little and short anymore. They usually end up about three typewritten pages. I've given up writing letters by hand. I get carried away.
Oh, this is your reporting. I mean, this part I met you.
Yeah, I guess. Of course, it's pretty cut down when I write my parents.
You can't expect an audience from that?
From my family, yeah.
They'll listen to you?
Yeah. Well, Jim's parents will too, but, you know, I get the impression of Jim kind of sitting in the chair wishing I wouldn't talk quite so much because I'm going to bore him. There's so much in Coco, you know, there's so many people. And there's so much that they can talk about that nobody stays on anything very long. It just jumps. It's like Bew's letter. You know, he can list out all those things.
I didn't hear that letter. Let's have a little of it, Suzanne.
And then I need to call Glenn Guy because we leave here around 4 to 3.
Well, this came Monday, and I got home. I'd been gone, been at school, and I got home and found the letter, and I read it in the living room, and I just died, you know, because I thought, this is the neatest letter. So I went tromping into the breakfast room with it, and I said, Jim, this is neat. Jim was, he's got his papers completely covering that long table there in the breakfast room, the whole length of it, and he's got the chairs filled. Chair here and a chair there, and it's all stacked up with papers. And he's sitting there. And I said, this sure is a neat letter that your dad wrote. And he says, it's stupid. I said, what do you mean? He says, it's just stupid. He says, how the hell does he think we're going to make hay up here? You know, so I feel, well, from the tone of his voice, he didn't want to talk about it much. You know, so I went back in, and a few minutes later, he came in, and he says, if your mother writes my parents about you finishing degree, I'm going to write her a letter. This is out of the clear blue sky. My mother would never write them, you know, about that. Anyway, he was upset about the letter. Well, the other day
what was that? If your mother what?
If my mother were to write Nell and Bew and say something about me finishing my degree before we went up to Georgia, then Jim was going to write her a letter. Because he said, if my father finds out that your parents are worried about me, then he won't let us do it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll just...
yeah.
I said, well, I don't think... Every time I write home, I sound all thrilled and excited about it. But anyway, the other day we reread the letter, and he was in a better humor, and we got to laughing about it because it's just... the whole thing's kind of insane, I think. Anyway, yeah, he says, Dear Jim and Suzanne, and he never writes. We get postcards every once in a while filled with, you know, the two, and we bought 4 acres written with numbers out. You know. He says, Hi, I've been thinking about us having approximately $1,700 plus tied up in a fence and no cows, horses, etc., grazing inside. What do you all think about? He has a dash. And then in an alphabetical list, starting with A and running through F, He says, as soon as possible, lime fertilize present pastures, approximately 7 acres. Have someone cut and bale all hay possible before winter. How many bales per acre? These are questions
is it
for us.
Is it a pasture?
Yeah, there are three cleared pastures.
And
mixed in with
growing
the
there?
Yeah, it's fescue grass. It's good grass.
Is it?
Yeah, it's fescue.
Well.
But it hadn't been fertilized at all.
Sure.
And it would make good hay if you were there to make it. So, and Jim and I have been talking about, you know, you've got to keep it up. You have to put fertilizer on it. Check it. So he says, have someone cut and bale all hay possible for winter. How many cuttings? How much to cut and bale? About 40 cents per bale. That's just to get somebody else to do it for us. You pay them. Patch roof and nail tin over the holes in the floor, etc., of the Snuffy Smith for hay storage this one winter. And that's that cabin. It's been there 75 years, and it's got one big room. It's got two rooms and about three windows in the whole place. And at the back, you have the cabin, and they have a little addition that they put on for a kitchen, and that runs the length, too. And they have a storeroom at one side. So it's just a rectangle. It's been there 75 years. And that's where they got the name Jarrett. They thought that the Hobarts were Jarretts. Jarretts had lived in the old cabin.
Oh.
So he says, this fall by six of Mr. Hobart's best heifers, less if need be to match out the hay. If we must buy hay, probably better to wait. He's going to buy six of the Black Angus heifers that Mr. Holworth runs across the pasture. Well, you know, Jim, this is what just kills Jim and me, because we think, why on earth does he want heifers? You know, and all he ever wanted in the beginning was just a steer to butcher, you know, so they have meat to put in their freezer. Well, now he wants six of his best heifers. Yes, to match the hay. This would utilize fence, pasture, Snuffy Smith, and getting a jump on starting a small herd.